the superintendent's about to put a memo out to all the commanders. Periodically, we want you with some regularity, holding, in fact, the roll call that you do in the department out there in the community, so it's visible because they want to see you.
Bankruptcy law is designed to protect an organization that has too much debt, that has too many liabilities, and it gives court protection to an organization that files bankruptcy.
Our wounded warriors, sometimes in body and in mind, coming back different than when they left for the war zone.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09, and today is Thursday. It is January 21st, 2016. Welcome to the program. It's a little bit warmer out there today in Chicago. Not a lot of snow to deal with or ice, so you'll be getting to work a little easier this morning. Hopefully, the roads and traffic will cooperate. However, if you're a business traveler and you're headed out east, you might want to call your airline. Airlines have been canceling flights. They've been allowing changes already. There's a major blizzard that's going to be impacting the Washington, D.C., Baltimore, possibly New York and Boston areas. Some estimates say as much as a foot, maybe 2 feet of snow coming there this weekend. Well, after a rough start yesterday on the stock market, Asian stocks are mostly in the red again today, surrendering early gains. Oil is drifting lower this morning. At one point yesterday, the Dow was down more than 500 points, and you can blame uncertainty for the massive sell-off, not just oil. Susan Kempler at TIAA Cref says investors need to see earnings growth to get back into the market.
I don't know if crude's holding the markets hostage. I think the problem with the markets right now is there's a lot of uncertainty out there. I wish I had a crystal ball. We can't predict the markets. What we can do is buy good stocks and hold them for the long term.
On the Asian markets this morning, the Nikkei is off 399, the Hang Seng off 344, the Shanghai off 97. In Europe, the FTSE's trading higher 22 points, and the Dow futures this morning are lower by about 55. The S&P futures are lower by about 5. In Davos, the World Economic Forum is underway, and the United Nations Secretary General says projections for rising global unemployment over the next 2 years are, in his words, alarming. And the UN chief will be keep pushing for job opportunities, especially for young people. The number of unemployed people will increase by nearly 2.3 million in 2016 and 1.1 million in 2017 as the result of global economic slowdown that we're seeing now and from last year. Yesterday, Vice President Biden addressed the world business leaders in Davos, championing the middle class.
The thriving and growing middle class has been the main reason for economic stability, political stability, and social stability in our democracies. It is the fiber that holds us together. When the middle class does well, the wealthy do very well, and the poor have a ladder up.
Also at Davos, Facebook COO Sheryl Sandberg asked a question that many women around the world have also been asking. Where are all the women leaders?
Men still run the world. I'm not sure it's going that well. There are 17 countries in this world run by women, 17 out of hundreds of countries. Almost every country in the world has less than 5% of its top companies run by women, including the United States and every country in Europe. That means we're not using the full talents of the population. That means when it comes to making the decisions that impact our world, women are not at those tables where decisions are made.
According to the latest data from the United Nations, only 22% of the national parliamentarians are female. Only 11 women serve as head of state. 10 serve as heads of government. Away from the political world, the numbers are just as bad or even worse. Although women account for almost half of the college-educated workforce here in the United States, they hold only 19% of board seats, and only 4.6% of them are CEOs. This is The Opening Bell on WGN 720. Our discussion today is going to center on startups, not these big companies that we're seeing at the World Economic Forum in Davos, the CEO, you know, the Facebooks and all of those huge companies. Those are the people that are at Davos. But the people that are here working the pavement every day are the people like Dave Kirchhoff. Dave, welcome to The Opening Bell this morning.
Thanks.
First of all, for getting up.
My pleasure. I'm enjoying the pavement in Chicago as opposed to the slopes in Switzerland.
Is Snap Kitchen is your pet project, is your company, and it's growing. You're expanding into the Chicago market. Give us an idea of what Snap Kitchen is for those of us who aren't familiar with it.
It's an amazing and unique idea, which is basically making every day from scratch healthy meals that are available in super convenient locations.
So it's like going to McDonald's, but healthy, and it's like the food's already there.
No, and the food's even different from that. Yeah. Like it's you know, a tip, like our best selling item is bison quinoa hash. We do good business in lasagna, chicken enchiladas, things like that. They're actually meals. As opposed to things that look like something you would get in the food court.
The expansion is happening because you've mainly been in Texas, right? That's where you started,
yep.
In the Austin area. And you've been in the suburbs, in Naperville, if I'm correct, right?
That's right.
And so now you're in the city. When we come back, in our next segment, I want to talk to you about why you've chosen to expand into the city, whether that's going to continue, and also just, you know, the ups and downs that you've had and where you're headed.
Fantastic.
All right, Dave Kirchhoff again. It's Snap Kitchen. We'll have the discussion on the opening bell right after we check traffic. Here's Mary Vandeveld.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Yes, it could have been worse. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was briefly down 566 points yesterday, but managed a late rally to close off by only 250 points. The S&P 500 lost just over 1%. Renewed concern over China's slowing economy and the steep drop in oil prices have been blamed for the market whiplash. At $26.76 a barrel, oil futures are now at their lowest since May of 2003. The managing director at Jones Trading tells ABC News that it's a good time to buy stocks at deep discounts. It's either a really good time or a really bad time to work for Walmart. More than a million employees are about to get raises to an average full-time rate of $13.38 an hour. But simultaneously, the retailer is closing 154 underperforming stores around the country. States that have legalized marijuana are taking a new look at making it easier for out-of-state investors to get into the business, saying they need new options to finance expansion. Voters in California may vote in the fall on a proposal to legalize pot. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 520. We're talking with Dave Kirchhoff, who's the CEO of Snap Kitchen, who's expanding into Chicago. They have expanded into Chicago. They're also getting ready to expand into Philadelphia, growing by leaps and bounds. What is the secret to your success? Why are you growing?
I think the secret to the success is just, and I wish I could claim credit for inventing it, mm-hmm. but I didn't, is it's an amazing idea that otherwise doesn't exist in nature, which is, again, it's a place where you can get meals that you're actually excited to eat that are almost strangely good for you, and it's kind of hyper-convenient. And so getting those three things all at the same time doesn't normally happen in nature. And so what we find is that in the markets where we first opened, Austin, Houston, now Dallas, it's just absolutely taken off.
When we talk about health food, the first thing that comes to my mind is some of the stuff that, you know, we hear Mary and Kevin and some of the other people in the morning show, they're eating kale and all of this other, you know, which I call kind of whale vomit, basically.
Horrible diet food.
Oh, it's horrible. This is as we were talking in the break, real food.
Yeah.
Describe like what breakfast would be like this
morning.
Well,
yeah, so breakfast, a good typical breakfast for me would be chili and eggs. Or we also have bison patty served over eggs. It's sort of, you know, the typical dinner for me would be lamb lasagna or bison hash, or we have a dish called, you know, naked beef. Like, it's just, it's kind of like, it feels like man food, and it's substantial. It's almost, it has a comfort food vibe to it. It's just all the bad stuff has been taken out without losing the taste. So you almost don't believe how good it is for you.
Your experience, your past experience, brings to this current job a knowledge of healthy eating, and because you were the CEO, or you were at Weight Watchers,
yep.
CEO, right?
Yep.
And so this is healthy food, but it's not diet food. And did you find like at Weight Watchers that if you give people healthy options that they take them? Like if you put Snap Kitchen next to a McDonald's, don't you think more people would choose the latter or no?
It's one of the reasons why I love this concept is what I saw people struggling with when I was at Weight Watchers, our members and everybody else, which is if you give people, you know, 10 unhealthy choices and 2 healthy choices, usually temptation takes over and they take the unhealthy choice. What is important about concepts like SNAP is that it's a store you can walk into. There are no bad choices. You can turn your brain off and just simply select the thing that looks good, and you don't feel like you have to make sacrifices, at all. So that's kind of the whole premise of it, is getting people to no longer have to choose the kale horrible diet food as opposed to the thing that actually looks comforting, giving them everything all at once.
So the concept, how do you make the food? Because most of it's prepackaged, so it's already portion control, right?
Yeah.
Do you make it on site? Do you make it? How does that work?
It's one of the things that I most loved about the company when I first joined was actually working in the kitchen. So in Chicago, there's one central kitchen that makes the food for all the surrounding stores. That kitchen, it's hard to do it full justice, but they make every single thing from scratch. So it's, if there's a sauce, it's made from scratch. I mean, if there's applesauce, we're roasting apples. It's made with amazing ingredients. There's full transparency. There's a big culinary tradition that runs through our restaurants that is all about food that you crave.
The location in Chicago is at 211 West Adams. You couldn't pick a better spot than that.
It's pretty awesome.
And you started as a food truck. This company started as a food truck.
Well, that was one of our first locations. So when we first launched in Austin, Austin and Houston, one of the first locations after we opened up our first couple stores was we got a great lease on a little food truck that was in downtown Austin that was next to five other food trucks that served amazing but bad for you food. And people downtown would go, bad food truck. I hate myself. Time to go to the SNAP truck.
Yeah, after the fried Oreos from the one truck and the fried hush puppies. There are always ups and downs with startups, and we focus on this program a lot about innovation and the trials and tribulations of those new companies. What were yours at Snap Kitchen?
I think the what we find at Snap is once people start going, they fall in love with it. But it doesn't look like anything else, so I think it almost looks like an alien being when they first see it. And until they actually start trying some of the meals, they're just not quite sure what to make of it. So the biggest opportunity we have in a market like Chicago or Philadelphia or any other place we're going to is just making people aware that you can actually have this option.
What does the future hold? We talked about Philadelphia. You're in Austin. You're in Chicago, the suburbs. What's next?
In Houston and Dallas. Clearly more cities are to follow. We seem to be focusing on manly cities like Chicago and Philadelphia.
With chili and eggs, that's
exactly,
the perfect breakfast.
Perfect.
Yeah.
But we're making some big bets on digital right now, and we're building up a team to, sort of mobile-first apps, things like that, to make it really easy for you to order up what you're looking for. We're going to continue upping the ante on the quality of our menu and making more and more great stuff. So we have a million ways to really build this concept out fully.
So I have a question. Where did you get the name Snap Kitchen? What does that come from?
I was brought in to sort of work with the founder, amazing guy, Martin Burson, who started the company 5 years ago. So I can't claim ownership for it. I love the name. Yeah. I mean, because it's just a snap is something that's super easy. And that's the whole idea behind this concept is it's healthy meals, super easy.
What can we say about healthy eating that has not been said already? I mean, first of all, we said this is not diet food. It's not like you're getting something that's going to taste awful.
Right.
It tastes good.
Is what makes me crazy about healthy eating prior to concepts like SNAP, which is we give people a choice right now. We say you can either have something that is really craveable and super easy and super convenient, or you can have health food. And we say you have to make a choice between those two. And what do most people choose? They choose the stuff that looks amazingly great and is super easy but bad for you. And it's ridiculous because food should be all those things all at the same time. Food should be great tasting. It should also be good for you. It should also be easy. And we need more concepts like that.
Well, we'll look forward to following the success of Snap Kitchen and see where you go from here. And I look forward to coming down and trying this because the eggs and chili, that sounds delicious for breakfast.
Awesome.
David Kirchhoff is the CEO of Snap Kitchen. You can find Snap Kitchen on Twitter at Snap Kitchen. Their website is snapkitchen.com. And you can find David on Twitter as well at D Kirchhoff. David, thanks for getting up this morning on the opening bell and good luck to you.
Thanks for having me.
You can't shortchange basic services that we provide to our people and that we together provide as a government to make sure that public health and safety is preserved.
The trust factor is not just a goal. It's a key ingredient to effective community policing, which is what you need for safety.
It allows the State Board of Education to remove the current Chicago Public School Board, Board of Education, and create an independent authority for CPS until the State Board of Education determines that CPS is no longer in financial difficulty.
Those are some of the big stories happening around the world and right here in Chicago and Illinois today. We'll follow all of them throughout the morning here on WGN 720. The Steve Cochran Show coming up at the top of the hour after the news, and we'll keep you posted on that. A reminder that Jim Durkin will be on with Steve during the 7 o'clock hour, one of the lawmakers who's proposing this takeover of the state of public or the Chicago Public Schools. Yesterday was a roller coaster ride for sure on Wall Street after losses that reached near 570 points at one point during the day and a full tank overnight on the Asian markets. The Dow yesterday did recover some of the gains, but still it was a rough ride. Joining us now on the opening bell, Terry Savage at Terry Talks Money. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you? Are you a little nauseous from yesterday?
No, but I am watching the opening with great interest because the world leaders are gathered in Davos this morning, all trying not to talk about how the stock market could lead the world into global recession. There's a kind of a certain optimism there. The Asian markets, China down sharply overnight. The Shanghai Index down 3%. Futures pointing to a lower opening. And I think we'll still have plenty to talk about during the day today because we have clearly moved out of, you know, for 2012, 2013, and 2014, we had double-digit gains in the stock market. Last year was a flat year. And this year we are now going to see something we haven't seen, obviously, in a while. It's called volatility. And I'm not sure. I know volatility isn't over, and I'm not sure we put in the bottom yet.
And that's really what is making people nervous, especially those of us who lost in our 401ks after 2008. There are some people that are using the R word, possible recession. There are others who are telling people to sit tight. Where do you fall in the middle of all of this? What should we do if we see the market tanking again today?
Well, first of all, let's separate the economy from the stock market. Let's say just a couple words about the economy, and that is the U.S. economy is strongest in the world. All around the world, there are slowdowns, starting with China. Europe's been okay so far, but we are by far the strongest economy and the strongest currency. The Fed raised rates, so all the money in the world is sort of rushing here for safety. If you are living in Russia, the ruble just overnight crossed 80 rubles to the dollar. So whereas maybe a year and a half ago you took 42 or 3 rubles to buy $1 worth of goods, now it takes 80. So the Russians are trying to do anything to get rid of their currency before it becomes totally worthless. So think about living in Russia. That's an economic problem. Their currency is too strong. They don't believe the government. Those are separate problems, but they all impact the stock market. The number one point I want to make is America is the strongest place in the world. Don't have to believe me. It's not a PR statement. We're not growing a lot, but we're growing better than everybody else in the whole world. And if our strong dollar doesn't price our exports out of the market, make them too expensive for others to buy, our economy ought to muddle through without a recession.
Well, that's the hope. There was discussion yesterday that this notion of more rate increases by the Fed this year probably not going to happen now. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, you can see that in the futures markets. There's only a 22% chance of 2 rate increases. There's literally very little chance that the Fed will get to raise rates. In fact, I can picture sitting at the next Fed board meeting when they call it to order and everybody looks around the table at each other and go, dude, did we make a mistake? Did we trigger this?
Yeah, did we press the wrong button? And that's a fair question to ask. Did they?
I think it was the wrong button, but I don't think they'll make the same mistake twice. They're pretty smart people, but I don't think that a group of committee of unelected people can decide proper price of interest rates for the whole economy. That's a separate subject. We have what we have. We have a system where we're the strongest currency because our rates are a little bit higher and everybody else around the world is trying to lower their rates. It draws money here. It draws money to the stock market because the money that comes here is not going to be like every grandma sitting and watching her money earn, you know, less than a quarter of a percent in the bank. So that's, I think, ultimately, one of the more bullish things you could say about the stock market is the world's money is coming here, and a lot of it will flow into the stock market.
You talked
but
about.
I want to go back and make
sure.
a quick point, Steve, yep. because no one can promise you what the market will do or whether this was the bottom or whether it will bounce down to yesterday's lows and then bounce up. You know, that's a fool's game. What you need to know is yourself. You're not sorry that you and I talked in March of 2009 and that you didn't sell out of your 401k when the Dow was 6,700. You didn't sell that S&P index fund, and you're really glad these years later that you didn't. And you're glad that you kept putting whatever $100 a month that came out of your paycheck for the 401k contribution. For everyone in that position, you're getting a chance to go buy stocks on sale. And if you have a long-term time horizon, I mean 20 years or more, you should be, you know, continue on your investment plan. The people now that I focus on are those that are just at retirement age, the ones that are now reaching the age where they have to withdraw from their IRAs, minimum required distribution. It's been so easy to be complacent about the gains and to feel your 401k or IRA was growing. Now is the time not to be complacent and make sure you have the right balance of what I call chicken money, liquidity, money in the bank even though it pays nothing, and stocks because you do have a 20-year lifespan ahead of you. And it's when you do that, you're either thinking about selling during a rally or you're taking action before it goes lower. And that's the critical question for some people now.
You mentioned the World Economic Forum in Davos. I was watching some of the sessions yesterday, and the cut we played at the top of the show was from Facebook CEO Sheryl Sandberg, who asked, where are all the women leaders? She says, the world's not going so great right now, and maybe it's because there aren't enough women running companies around the world. Would you agree with that, and is that a problem?
Well, first of all, I'm a strong supporter of women's leadership in corporate America and other places. But when you think about it, the two most powerful women in the world are not only our own Fed chairman, Janet Yellen, but Christine Lagarde, who's the chair of the IMF. And so I'm not sure that strong companies are built on gender diversity and every other kind of diversity. But I'm not sure economic growth is built on that even women's leadership has such a key determinant of corporate economic growth. But I'm all in favor of more women on corporate boards and in corporate C-suite.
Terry Savage, good of you to be with us on the opening bell this morning, and we'll be watching the markets with you today as they hopefully go up and not down. You can find Terry, terrysavage.com, and on Twitter at Terry Talks Money. Have a great day, Terry.
You too.
All right. It's 5:45. This is the opening bell, and let's check traffic with Mary Vandeville.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:50. Welcome back to the program. We're talking startups today and entrepreneurship. The company is Bond, and Lindsay Friedman is with us this morning on the opening bell. She's a writer for entrepreneur.com. And good morning, Lindsay. First of all, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Good morning to you, too.
I'm one of those people that still likes to write a note. You know, after you appear on the show or if I meet you in person, I like to just send a handwritten note to people and say thank you. I still think that is a big part of just having that connection with folks. But sometimes it's a lot of work to do that. And Bond, I guess, takes a little bit of that work out of the equation, right?
Right. The whole point is kind of to allow technology and the traditionalism of thank you letters to kind of converge. We're so busy these days, especially CEOs of big companies or even large businesses, or even just a small guy and starting his own company. So that's kind of the idea, is to help streamline that appreciation and that's vocalized in thank you notes.
So how does this work? How does Bond work?
So Bond works by, well, you can either do it online or through their app. You just kind of, you send them exactly the details, what exactly you want the letter to say and who you're going to send it to. And then the rest is up to the company after you pay them. They use this like cool little robot actually to write out the letter, and you have the option of either doing the general handwriting or fancy cursive or even your own handwriting before they send it off on, you know, the famous nice parchment and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So can people tell the difference? Have you been able to, and you've obviously looked at this a lot, can people tell the difference between real and fake and, you know, some machine doing this?
Well, it's not like it's just being printed off. They're actually using ink or special pen or even they can hold different utensils. So it's not necessarily fake. It's not being printed off. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure exactly if the handwriting is different, though. People could tell that it's not actually your handwriting.
Yeah, but if somebody doesn't know my handwriting, this is, you know, when I first saw this, I thought this is the thing that the president of the White House uses to sign bills automatically, right? It's the same technology.
I'm not exactly sure if it's the same technology, actually. This startup just really kind of took off this past year, so I'm not sure if this is actually what the White House is using or not. They might just be doing an old-fashioned printer.
Yeah, and I may be wrong with the same technology, but I think that what it is that the White House has this thing that signs President Obama's signature, and it looks like the same thing that's on the Bond website, which we can tell people is bond.co. And so how well are they doing, and where do they look like they're going?
Well, they're doing really well. They've ended the year in profit margins, and they're hoping to continue to expand. And in the next few years, they're actually working on offering a concierge service. And this, it would be kind of like the VIPs, where you would actually have someone on demand. So you would just write it up, a quick thank you, tell them to include a gift even or not, and they would take that thank you letter, that gift, right when you want them to, and kind of schedule when you would send those out.
What is the general price of one of these, and are they targeting you and me, or are they targeting companies, big companies?
The price is just like a normal old-fashioned note. You could do $350 a note for a normal person. And for businesses, the larger orders, it could range anywhere between $200 or $250. I think the way it's kind of going, the way the company is headed, it's anyone can really do it. But I think it's more common for the businessman or larger companies to kind of use this kind of thing.
We have been talking earlier this week and last week on the show about automation and robots taking our job. Is this going to take the job of some secretary somewhere?
You know what? There's still kind of a debate about whether or not it's still better to, you know, go through the motions of, you know, putting your own stamp on it, taking it to the post office yourself. It's kind of not just about the note, but the effort to send it to someone. So it's kind of like anything. Are you going to take the effort, decide to take the effort to do it yourself, or is it more about what the note actually contains?
Lindsay Friedman is a writer for Entrepreneur Magazine, entrepreneur.com. You can follow her on Twitter at L_Friedman, and Bond is at Bond on Twitter. And then their website, of course, again, is bond.co. You can read more of Lindsay's stuff again on entrepreneur.com. Lindsay, thanks for being with us on The Opening Bell.
All right. Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Have a great day. It's 5:55, and that's going to do it for The Opening Bell today. We want to thank our executive producer, Mary Sandberg, our engineers, Ben Cortez, production help from Kevin Powell and Ross Cochran, and we will see you bright and early tomorrow morning. Steve Cochran's coming up next, a big show. Again, Jim Durkin, one of the lawmakers proposing bankruptcy for the city of Chicago Public Schools, is on the program. And we'll see you tomorrow. It's 5:55.